Hello and welcome everyone to our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology monthly office hours call. This is a call where you can come and ask me whatever questions you have about whatever programs you're in related to what you're learning there. I want to welcome our new members, our members of the Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System program that we call CMDS, and I'm excited to have you as part of that journey. And I see that a lot of you are digging in and jumping in and learning and posting to Facebook and all that. So I really appreciate you being here, and I appreciate reading your intros and bios and getting to know you. We have a lot of diverse backgrounds here on that program, and adding to that, the diverse backgrounds of all the folks that are in our NEPT program, as well as our IRSPT program. So for those of you that are new, this call is a shared call that you get once a month. And as part of CMDS, you get this shared call where you get together with people from the nutritional endocrinology practitioner training, plus insulin resistance, and in any other programs that we may host in the future, and along with people that are also in with you in CMDS, Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System. So the questions will be related to questions that come up in various programs. We are going to start this particular one, assuming that I see the person whose lab it is, someone, Drina. Let me see if Drina's on here. We don't see Drina on here. So let me just double check with Lynn. But Drina, so if she's not on, then I'm just going to open it up until she gets on. So some people submit labs that they want me to have a quick look at. So allow, unlock, good. So they submit their labs so that we can review them on the call, and that's great. We just need to have those usually 24 to 48 hours, preferably in advance, so we have time to set it up so that it's accessible during the call. It's not a time where we're going to spend, 45 minutes going through a really complex lab, but certainly answering questions about it and introducing a test. So someone had submitted a Stratagene test, and I was going to go through some of the things that were in there and just give her a little rundown of it. But she's not here right now, so what we're going to do then is I'm just going to go into how these calls are formatted. Usually what we do is it's just open Q&A. Anybody that has a question, whether it's about content, about a particular person they're working with, about the something that they want to know related to whatever they're studying, and in general, sometimes it's just general health questions. As long as it's health questions and you stick to that and don't start asking a whole lot of other stuff, then we're good to go. So the way you do it is if you're on the telephone, you do a *2, that raises your hand. I see your hand, I open up your line, we get to chat. If you're only on the web, there is a chat box, and when you click on the web link, there should be a chat box that's visible. I'm just going to type my name into mine, and you can go there. If we're going to do a screen share, which we sometimes do when people submit labs or even spontaneously we'll open up a screen share, right now we're using that link that was in your email called Join Me, join.me/Dr. Rita Marie, and it looks like there's about five of you on here already. Judy, Stan, Valerie, and Viewer One, whoever Viewer One is, plus me. And there's a chat over there as well. So sometimes it gets confusing and we have to decide which one we're going to use for a chat. Future meetings like this, we're probably going to switch to, instead of using the Join Me, to using Zoom, because it's much easier to get a recording if we do a screen share. And that's the only reason we would do it, is if, like, say as we get further into this program and you've run some stool analyses and you want to show them, I can show them on the screen. We can actually get a recording of it if we use Zoom. Very difficult to get a recording of it using what we're using now, which is called Join Me. So that's the story. I still don't see Drina on, but Drina, if Drina gets on, or Drina, if you're on the listening in on the lab, just let me know, because I don't want to go through your thing and not have you here. Otherwise, I will go through it, but I'll do it at the end, and then you can come listen back. So if ever you do want me to answer questions that you have, or you have a lab you want me to take a look at, then I would go ahead and you can't be on the call, then go ahead and click the link that's in the email that we send you and post your questions there. There's also a spot that's on our site, and usually I have one of my team members go to that spot on the site and copy those questions into the chat here anyway, so I only have to look at one place. So if you're not going to come to the call, it's much easier if you just put them in on this Instant Teleseminar chat. So all the housekeeping aside, I'm going to double check. So I'm going to double check on the back end to see if there are any questions. Lynn, it doesn't look like you posted any questions to the Q&A box. So if there are any questions that were typed in on the CMDS Ask page, then go ahead and type them in and move them into this. I don't see her on the call, so I'm going to just text her that. Yep, so we're just going to open up the lines. So it looks like Green is not going to be here till 4, so probably another hour. So we'll catch her at the end of the call. So Stan said, I'm ready to listen today. Zoom is a great idea. Use it regularly. Great. That's great feedback. I've heard that from a lot of people. I've only used it a couple of times. I asked my team to set it up for this call, and they hadn't used it before, so they didn't have what they needed, they said. And so hopefully for the next call, I'll make a point of getting it done. We had a really busy week, so nobody got around to setting it up. So we'll do that, and all we have to do is send out the reminder. I think the problem was the reminders had already gone out by the time we decided on Monday that we wanted to try it. Okay, so who else? Oh, you can save the chat. That's great to know, Stan. I didn't know you could save the chat, because what we end up doing with the chat on Join Me is copy-pasting it into a Word file. So it's great if we can save the chat automatically. So we'll do that next time. I actually do have the Zoom set up right now. And if anybody wants to go there, I'm going to try to do a joint, but I don't know if you're going to hear me on Zoom. Well, you'll hear me on Instant Teleseminar. Anyway, I'll pop that into the chat if anybody wants to be there. So I'm going to try to record it on Zoom if we do the screen share later in the call. So I'll let you know that later in the call. All right. So who has a question? Who has a comment? Who wants to share something, a client, patient that they're working with, that you've done some assessments on, that you've done some labs on, or just any general questions you have, please do a *2 on your telephone keypad. And if you're just on the web, go ahead and type it in. Well, you guys are quiet. Usually there's like tons of hands up by now, and there's tons of questions typed in. Okay, so Jacqueline. Hi, Jacqueline. How can one increase their amino acid nutrient profile? Okay, so if the question you mean is if you have a client who you suspect is low in amino acids, or you've tested and you found them to be low in amino acids, how do you improve that? I'm assuming that's what you want to be asking, and if not, just go ahead and correct me. So in answer to that question, the thing is that, well, amino acids are, you can supplement them with amino acids, which wouldn't be my first choice unless there's very specific ones that are out of balance. But if overall you're looking to improve amino acid profile, you want to improve their protein digestion, because that's where amino acids come from. Well, what are the important parts of the digestive tract to improve protein absorption? Well, the stomach, and making sure that they have adequate stomach acid, making sure that they have adequate zinc and magnesium so that they can make adequate stomach acid. And sometimes what I'll do for that is I'll use bitters. Some herbs that have a bitter response, like dandelion, berberine, what's some of the others that are used? There's one in particular that it's drawn, angelica, orange peel, those all have a bitterness to them. Or you can take that as a tincture, like 10, 15 minutes before the meal. And this is all talked about in our upper GI section of the course. The other thing you can do is have them to get that bitter is to chew on greens right before their meal. Give me 1 second. I'm going to take a little water. Okay. You can have them just grab some bitter greens like dandelion leaves, arugula, kale, some of the stuff in the spring mixes that are really bitter, this really curly stuff, and chew on it, but not just chew it and swallow it, but chew it and chew it and chew it and chew it and chew it. So that in the mouth, like, a couple of minutes. And what that does is stimulates receptors under the tongue that then stimulates the digestive juices to start flowing. So it increases HCL as well as increases bile flow and all that. So those are a couple of ways. And the other third way is you can supplement with HCL. And I'm only a fan of that if you've done an HCL challenge and you're absolutely sure that there's no sign of gastritis or ulcer or other mucosal problems. That You don't want to disrupt that and cause them to have pain. So that's my favorite ways. The other way is enzymes, protease enzymes. And it depends on why do they have a low amino acid profile. Is it low because they're not eating enough amino acids, or is it low because they're not digesting enough amino acids? So those are some of my thoughts. Well, Janine said, I did some assessments and I'm depleted in anything. I can only use food right now. Any hope for me? Absolutely. You've got to really optimize your digestive tract. And if you go through the program and you start at the top, we start with the brain-gut connection. So you start with the going into parasympathetic state instead of sympathetic, doing the breathing and appreciation before each meal, looking at some vagal nerve stimulation things, which are in a later chapter. I go through them briefly at the beginning, but in the gut, the neurology section, the gut brain connection module, which I think is around 19. It's open to you, even though we're taking you through step by step, so you can skip ahead there and see some vagal nerve stimulation techniques. Eating whole foods and nothing but whole foods, drinking juices of fresh vegetables, doing sea vegetables. These are all really packed and loaded with nutrients. So yeah, you can definitely do it with food. You just have to know the right kind of foods to be eating. Yep. Let's see. Yeah, I don't have a Zoom link posted, Laura. I said I would post that later if we do a screen share. And we're not doing the screen share quite yet. And I have to figure out where to get that Zoom link since I'm not so familiar with it. I wonder if there's a way that I can, let me just see real quick. More Zoom. How do you invite people? I don't even know. Like I said, I was experimenting with it in the background and wasn't planning. I was going to plan to share my screen with Join Me. So I don't want to mess with that. I don't really know how to do that at this point. That's why we haven't switched to it. Oh, here's settings. Let's see. Microphone. Yeah. Nope. Don't know. Yeah, we don't have a Zoom link. Susan here from Boston. Yay. Hi, that's viewer six. And if you're on Join Me and you hover over the one that allows you to change it, it'll say viewer six, Susan, and you can just change your name to Susan instead of viewer six. That's the reason also I like Zoom better. It has you put your name in and it shows your name instead of just showing you as viewer 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. So let me look to see if there's any other questions posted. Favors from UK. Someone with a complex digestive issue with candida, parasite, food sensitivities, and SIBO. What's the best protocol to begin with? Okay, and I'm going to go through this over and over. I'm going to sound like a broken record. Yes, start at the top. You try to assess all the different places that are going on with them. So they have all those other things, but what's going on up front? You make sure that they are going into parasympathetic state while they eat, that they're continuing to go back there, that they chew their food thoroughly. You check the status of the upper GI. Oftentimes, low stomach acid contributes to the overgrowth of bacteria and funguses that don't belong there. So you look there. You make sure that they're optimized, that they have enough stomach acid. You do some of the techniques in case they don't. If they are, you make sure that they're digesting properly, that they have the right enzymes. And as things go down, then with something combination of SIBO, the first thing you want to do with the SIBO from the sympathetic dominant and parasympathetic is get them into more sympathetic dominant state, a parasympathetic dominant, because that's when the migrating motor complex works. And we'll get into SIBO much further down in the program. So I would highly recommend that if you are asking questions about modules that you haven't gotten to yet, that you hold off and you go through those modules. And then if you've gone through those modules, then go ahead and ask. But there's a whole bunch of strategies that I could take the 5, 6, 10 hours to explain to you here, but they're all in the site. So I want you to get the full thing. So if you have then more of a specific strategy that you want to know about. So food sensitivities we start with, right? Getting off of the gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and anything they know they're sensitive to. I'm not a big fan of doing testing. Just because I think the tests don't always show up, and I think leaky gut is an issue. So you get rid of the top ones, and then you work on the gut and all that. So I would say I would start with what are they eating, getting rid of the stuff that's hurting their digestion, making sure they're going into parasympathetic and activating vagal nerve response while they're eating, and that they're chewing properly, and make sure that their stomach acid is good. and that they're off of foods that they're known sensitivities. Those are the things I would work on first. Okay, a lot of the other stuff is just going to start to get better. If they've already been diagnosed with SIBO, like they've had the breath test and it's come up positive, then you may want to look at altering the diet. And in addition to just taking out the sensitivities in terms of immunologic sensitivity, is look at a FODMAP or a modified FODMAP SCD diet. And we have that in the program further along. So that's where I would go. I'm not a big fan of protocols. I'm a big fan of restoring proper function, and you use techniques and strategies to do that. Char, similar question. What do you suggest if someone is low in zinc and bitters? Well, would you start with bitters and zinc before the meal to make sure they have enough HCL? Yeah, I think that that's a great idea. Now, some people, they tolerate it and it works really well to jumpstart it by giving them HCL. But you always want to go to, why is this person low in stomach acid? What's going on? Is it a zinc deficiency? Well, that may not be the original cause, but if they are deficient in zinc, they're not going to be able to make enough HCL, right? And then there's the sympathetic, parasympathetic. There's the lower esophageal sphincter. And there's hiatal hernia, and there's the foods that they're eating, right? So are they eating, drinking alcohol, caffeine? Are they eating foods that disrupt the body's ability to make that? Is there some destruction going on there? So I generally start with cleaning up the diet, cleaning up the way that they eat, the food hygiene, so to speak, the yoga of eating, as I like to call it. Get them on bitters and zinc at the same time. If you want to do an HCL supplement, make sure you do the HCL challenge. But of course, if they're already having gastritis, you don't want to challenge them with HCL because it can make them worse. So you want to do some healing, soothing things. And in the upper GI module, we talk a whole lot about demulcents and, you know, things that can soothe and heal, like slippery elm and licorice, DGL licorice root, and plantain, and flax and chia, and a whole bunch of other things like that. So you want to make sure that you're doing things to soothe, that they're on nutrients that can help support that. And there's a whole list of nutrients in there. And then I would do the bitters before the meal, usually 5 to 15 minutes before. How long is it safe to use bitters or HCL to correct these low? So how long is it safe to supplement with HCL is a much different question than how long is it safe to supplement with zinc, because the body won't make more HCL than it needs. Even if it's being stimulated, it's not like it's a pharmaceutical. But HCL itself, if you're giving it and the person's already making enough and then you're giving them more, that can be dangerous because that can create some irritation and inflammation in the gastric mucosa. So that's the kind of thing you'd want to consider. So I wouldn't do long-term supplementation of HCL. Usually I do short-term supplementation of HCL while I'm correcting the underlying causes of their gut being out of balance and their HCL being out of balance. Yeah, and if you know they're not absorbing protein well due to the quality of hair and nails, you can do the bitters and the zinc for as long as you need to, but just go easy with the HCL. And you can tell with the HCL, it's not like you say, do an HCL challenge and it comes up that they need 4 and you start doing 4 and you just keep going with 4. You're having them constantly be tuning in to how they feel. And if they start to get like heat in their stomach after they take it, that means they're starting to replenish. So you have them back off a little bit. You never want them to take more HCL than they need because it can cause destruction of the stomach lining. And you also should be, while you're supplementing with the bitters and HCL, you always also want to be working on their gastric mucosa. So you want to be working with demulcent type things to soothe and heal and repair that lining. Let's see, who else do we have? Janine, my mom has diabetic gastritis and choking problems. I keep telling her not to take PPIs. Her doctor puts fear in her that her gastritis will get worse. She won't go to a chiropractor for adjustments. I gave her Manuka honey and it seemed to help. Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever works. It's really hard working with parents. Let's just say that. Mom will take the medications that the doctor gives and they don't necessarily want to listen to their kids. So know that you're in the same place as everybody else when dealing with parents. She's only going to do what you want her to do. If you just say, don't take the PPIs without giving her some alternatives, though, you will be feeling, you know, she's going to be feeling scared. So you already have access, all of you, to the done-for-you protocols. If you go to the left sidebar, further down after all the core content modules, you'll see where it says done for you. And we do have the protocols for healing at ulcers, gastritis, reflux. It would be similar to that. So, you know, feel free to just go in there and just see. Well, get her to take some DGO licorice, right? Just get her to take some of that in a powder form, really works the best, or lozenges, and have her take that. And then slowly build her to the point where she feels confident not doing it. But the problem with taking the PPIs, it's lowering the stomach acid, which decreases the digestion of protein, decreases the absorption of minerals. So you're creating more imbalances by continuing to take the PPIs. But you can support her while she takes her PPIs, because she'll get to the point where she won't need them anymore if you support her right. So pull out the reflux protocol, look at DGL, look at the demulsins, look at actually making sure she's got the right amount of stomach acid. But as you heal the lining, she'll be able to do things that will help her to produce more, like bitters. I wouldn't start with bitters because she's already got gastritis, and if we stimulate her stomach to start producing more, she may feel that pain. So start with demulsins and healing and healing and healing and healing until you get to the point where maybe you feel comfortable enough that she doesn't have the attack so much, that you make sure she takes her PPIs in between meals. That's another thing to make sure, if you've got people that are taking these proton pump inhibitors or any other antacids, that they're taking them between their meals, because if they take it with their meals, it's going to have more of a disruptive effect on digestion. So always have them take those between meals, and then you can always have them take the bitters, not bitters so much with gastritis, but like DGL licorice and slippery elm before the meal. And then after the meal, if they're feeling uncomfortable, you can have them do slippery elm lozenges, and that can help. So lots of good stuff here. Okay, no more questions there. I'm going to go to chat. Oh, is there a recipe for making bitters? I don't have a particular one. I look at formulas. I like Herbalist and Alchemist formula in the tincture form. But if you're doing it where you're just taking it and using food, it could be anything at all. You just take whichever bitters that you can tolerate the taste of, because they are going to be bitter and you can't sweeten them. And you go ahead and you do them. So dandelion's one, berberine's one, orange peel. Like I said, Herbalist and Alchemist, if you look at what their formula is and you want to make your own, theirs is a really very well-tested formula. All right. Questions. So we have a hand up. We have Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hi.
I had a question about myself.
Okay. You always have questions about yourself. That's okay.
I do. You know how a while back we were talking about the compounded T3 and kind of adding that in and finding that sweet spot,
mm-hmm.
and how if you have symptoms of hyper, then you back off. Well, I didn't have, I guess, the traditional, I didn't think they were the traditional symptoms of hyper, but I started getting a little, like, nauseated and a little lightheaded and kind of feeling like tightness in my chest, like a little elephant was sitting on my chest.
Mm.
And to me, that was maybe what was going on. And I saw my doctor, and he said, yeah, and we're going to decrease the T3 a little bit and see if those symptoms subside. In the meantime, is there anything that you can think of that might, because I didn't realize that was a symptom of anxiety. Yeah. I thought anxiety, I haven't ever had, like, physical, like that tightness in my chest. I thought it was my lungs or my heart or something.
Yeah.
And he said, no, that's a symptom of anxiety. And I thought, really? I thought anxiety was more like overwhelm. But anyways, I have a newfound respect.
Yes, you have a found. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's really being careful with that. Now, the other thing that he could do is, instead of just jumping on the, oh, it's probably that it's too much T3, why don't you test? Why don't you just draw some blood right then and there? Say, okay, go ahead and stop it, but let's see if that's what it really is. Test you right there on the spot.
Yeah, we did draw blood.
Oh, good. Okay, good. So you'll know for sure.
But the problem is, I guess they have to send the labs off to Dallas, and it's going to take a little while.
Right. You won't have the response right away, so I would highly recommend that you decrease it. But then you'll know if that was really it. If there was something else. Now, if you decrease it and those symptoms go away, if you want to really be scientific, then you do it again, increase it again. And if they come back, it's kind of clear. Yeah, because other things can cause things, and sometimes there's just a coincidental thing. You know, causation is not necessarily it when there's correlation. So it could be other things, but that would be the first thing for sure to look at. And they'll be curious to see what your T3 levels are.
Yeah, I can't wait to see. I was calling today, are they in? Are they in? Yeah, because it's just interesting. I noticed the migraines started increasing. Like usually maybe I would get like 2 a month, and I've had like 5, and it's not even the middle of the month yet. So I'm wondering, I'm like, wow, could that correlate? It is a hormone. I'm trying to kind of, I don't know.
Yep. I think there's so many symptoms. You know, it's agitation. It's, you know, think about it as being revved up cellular energy. What kind of things can that cause? Mm-hmm. So, a revved up cellular energy in terms of brain function can be anxiety. It can be palpitations. It can be a tightening in the chest. It can be, nausea. Yeah, that can come from when you've got a revved up metabolic energy. So I think all of these things, while they're not the ones you initially right away think about, they definitely can be related. So have you stopped it, and have you felt any different?
I stopped it. I haven't noticed anything yet. But, I was splitting it, so I took a dose last night. So I'm just wondering, because it really kind of surfaced this morning. It's almost like just a general illness, a feeling of unwellness. I don't even know exactly how to describe it. But I was wondering if there was anything.
Did you check excipients in there? Did you check to make sure that those T3s, compounded, they could have gluten in them or some kind of trace of some kind of starch that you're allergic to, because there's usually a starch in there.
Oh, they're compounded.
They're compounded. I verified that they were. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yes, we're very, very careful, because I can tell immediately when I've been gluten. It is not a good thing.
Well, when you said that kind of feeling of unwell, that's what I thought about.
Oh, yeah, that's true. This feels a little bit different than when I've been glutened. Usually when I've been glutened, I feel like all the energy has been sucked out of my body.
Yeah.
And I get a migraine too, so that's interesting, because I've been getting more migraines now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But, those are supposed to be, they're compounded, and I believe they're really, really clean. We always try to be really careful about that. I just didn't know if there was anything in the meantime, because they told me it could take about 2 to 3 days to notice the symptoms kind of improving, even, with decreasing the dose.
I don't know, because T3 is a half-life of very short. I mean, if you're taking T3 compounded or whatever, even if it's Cytomel, you have to take it no further apart than 12 hours apart, or else it's just not, it's not going to stay in your system. Very short half-life. So I would think that it's going to dissipate rather quickly. So, but if you just took it last night for the last time, then, maybe 2 days, but I would think you should start to see gradual improvement over 24 hours. That's just my thought. Okay. I'm not the doctor. I don't have a license to prescribe T3. I haven't prescribed as much T3 as they may have, but just understanding the biochemistry, physiology, the way it affects the body, T3 is a very short half-life, so could be out of there in no time.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, when I'm working with people who are doing like a Wilson's protocol, and I'm working with their doctor to get them on the T3, they have to make sure that they take their next dose of T3 within that 12 hours exactly. If they're off by an hour or two, they just start to feel the energy crashing.
Okay. So probably not really anything that I could do at this point to kind of help symptom-wise, just more.
Well, symptom-wise, you look at, if the symptoms are migraines, if the symptoms is that, you can try putting hot compresses on your chest, maybe even a castor oil pack, I don't know. But just, doing more breathing and meditation, tapping, those kind of things to just slow things down a bit. Maybe some nervine kind of herbs, chamomile, lemon balm, milky oats, some of those kind of things that might just calm you down.
GABA,
I'm not sure how most people don't respond well to GABA unless they have a blood-brain barrier interruption. But I would look more at those calming kind of herbs to slow things down a bit.
Thank you. That's really, really helpful. It's been an interesting little journey. Like we were doing the Myers cocktails and they just tanked me completely. Oh, like I felt like I had the flu after I got them, like the vitamin C and glutathione, and everybody else, like the woman next to me is like, oh, don't you just love these things? I go out and I run like a triathlon and do all my training after these infusions. And I was like, oh, I kind of feel like I have the flu.
Okay, so if there's glutathione in there, I would be concerned about your sulfur metabolism pathways being blocked. So if what you can have them, see if you can do those cocktails without the glutathione and see if that makes a difference. If you just have your B vitamins and C. Because my suspicion when I hear that about somebody getting glutathione, is that you're getting some buildup of sulfur and your body's not being able to process it, that you have some, you might have some SNPs. I don't remember if I've seen your genetics, but you may have some sulfur metabolism issues, and that's why the glutathione backfires on you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look into that.
Yeah, try it with just the B vitamins and the C and see if that doesn't do it, because that may just be, you know, give you that edge.
Yeah, we played with it a couple ways. We've done just vitamin C, and the same thing kind of happened. We took B vitamins out, and the same thing kind of happened.
Okay, so you've already done that. Yeah, so it could be, you know, something, I don't know, it's revving up your metabolism too much, or it could be that there's something in there, a carrier in the saline. I mean, usually there's something going to be in there. You find out what are all the exact things in there. It may be just that you're sensitive to something in there.
Okay. I'll look into that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you. Good questions.
Thank you.
All right. I don't see any other hands up. You guys are shy. We got a nice new shy group. We usually have lots and lots of hands. I'm going to look to see if there's more questions typed in, though. Okay. Wow. So any recommendations to bring up vitamin D levels that are at 17? Can deficiencies in vitamin D cause panic attacks? Yes and yes. So vitamin D deficiencies can cause depression, anxiety, panic attacks, a gut that won't repair itself. One of the key things that you need to do to get the gut repaired is to make sure the vitamin D is up. It's really important for the membranes, for the endothelial membrane, the blood-brain barrier, that sort of thing. So 17, there's a couple of possibilities. So if you're on the if you're on the really slow vitamin D metabolism range, like where your receptors aren't working real well, like say you have some genetic SNPs that don't allow for good receptivity of the vitamin D, you're going to need higher doses for longer. When it's at 17, I usually, this step a rule of thumb, I'll just go, okay, 17, I'm going to get this person up to anywhere from 15 to 20,000 IUs, do it for 6 weeks, and then retest. The reason for 6 weeks is that you're generally not going to go over a safe range in 6 weeks, but you also don't want to just give like 5,000 and wait 6 months, right? You want to get that level up as quickly as you can. So if you overshoot the mark and you get the test in 6 weeks and you're at 110, then you know you're close. We want to keep you in the like 75 to 100 range. So you just back off a little bit and then you test again in 3 months. So you go to 10, if you do raise it real high, then you go to 10,000. You don't want to go to 10,000 for 3 months. Because if you've jumped up to 100, it means that your body's very receptive. Then I would drop it down to 5,000, do that for 3 months and see if you can maintain it and just keep, you know, testing and titrating until you find the right dose. But initially I would start with personally would start with 15, and do it for 6 weeks. You could start with lower and do it for longer. You could start with higher and do it for shorter. Depends on your level of tolerance for needles, I guess. All right, so Susan has an elderly father with the gallbladder removed years ago, has various gut infections over the years, so it's always a balancing act keeping him stable. In addition to probiotics, I once had him try Oxbile, but he had a strong reaction of diarrhea. Yeah, he does okay on HCL, but as you said, not a long-term solution. Insights on how we can help him. Yeah, so here's the thing. When the gallbladder's been removed, we don't have the regulation of bile flow. So what can happen is you got a constant drip from the liver of bile into the system. The gallbladder isn't storing and concentrating it. So it's kind of ineffective bile that flows through. So it's the same amount flowing through whether you're having a meal or not having a meal in effect. right? I mean, it could be a little bit more because sometimes the bitters in the food will stimulate the liver to contract. The fact that he's getting diarrhea says that he's having a dumping syndrome. It's overstimulating. Too much bile too fast can cause that to happen. So there's a couple of things you can do. I think in terms of somebody having their gallbladder removed, I like to see them on some kind of bile, because they just tend to not have enough and it doesn't tend to be secreted properly, and just take a little bit with the meal. You might lower the dose and see if that works. If he can't take any bile at all, then you want to look at, okay, how can I stimulate around meals, stimulate more of a movement of the bile from the liver into the bile ducts because there's no gallbladder. And you can do that with bitters, because bitters are certainly good at not only secreting, helping you to secrete more hydrochloric acid, it's a cholagogue. You can also look up the term cholagogues and look up those in the program, in the liver, gallbladder, the elimination unit. There's a whole section on liver and gallbladder, and there's a whole section in there of what do you do if you don't have a gallbladder. So there's a whole bunch of stuff, and there's a whole list of cholagogue herbs, and you can experiment with those. Tincture, tea, whatever he's willing to take, and very slowly see if you can find something that helps his digestion. Of course, there's the diet, right? Most people who have no gallbladders are like, don't eat fatty foods, so they don't eat fish and chips. But they still eat a lot of fatty foods. So smaller meals, less fat in the meals. But you also have to watch that you really don't digest carbs very well without a gallbladder, because when the bolus of food comes from the stomach into the duodenum, it's very acidic, and the acid there stimulates the gallbladder and the pancreas to secrete the alkalizing thing. Oh my goodness. Did you ever have that happen, that the word just won't come? Bicarbonate. Phew. Got it. So they both secrete bicarbonate. I kept saying that word, hydrochloric acid, over and over in my brain, and it was interrupting the pattern. So it's bicarbonate. So the liver, the gallbladder, and the pancreas stimulate the release of bicarbonate, and the bicarbonate goes and neutralizes that bolus of food so that it's more alkaline, and then starch gets digested better in an alkaline environment. So if a person doesn't have the gallbladder, they're not going to alkalize that bolus of food as well as they should, and they're not going to get such efficient digestion of carbs as well. So I try to get people on a relatively low glycemic diet, moderate amounts of fat, easy to absorb fat, switching fats to things like coconut oil, which are mostly medium chain triglycerides, and they don't need as much bile to be absorbed. They get absorbed, the medium chain triglycerides absorbed in through the chylomicrons, which are little like almost lymphatics that surrounds the gut. So there's a lot you can do. That's just an overview, but there's a lot more detail in my presentation in that module. It's in unit four or five, whichever the elimination unit is, and there's a whole section on that. But that'll give you a starting point. So many people are getting their gallbladders removed. It's very sad. So Charlotte, is it only necessary to do bitters prior to a protein meal of animal product, or would you stimulate acids in HCL prior to a meal with vegan protein? Absolutely any protein. Doesn't matter whether it's from an animal or a plant. Protein is protein is protein. And unless it's a pre-digested protein, which is, you know, an amino acid type thing, you should do it with either way. For example, in the case of nuts, since this is fat and protein, does digestion start in the stomach with this? Yeah, well, the digestion actually starts in the mouth, because there's also starches in nuts. Not much, but there are some starches that start to get broken down in the mouth by the salivary amylase, and then in the stomach with the proteases, and then it goes down into the small intestine, and you have to have good gallbladder function as well as pancreatic function to digest all of it. But the fats in particular need both pancreatic and gallbladder. So yeah, I would say that you should be taking the bitters. If you have low HCL or have somebody you're working with low HCL, then you definitely want them to be doing the bitters and or the HCL with all meals. So I'm confused. My understanding is that protein breaks down in the stomach and fats and carbs break down in the small intestine from the enzymes. So would you suggest stimulating acid with bitters prior to any meal, or just a protein? Okay, see, There's no such thing as a just protein meal. Animal proteins are fat and protein. Plant proteins are generally more carbohydrate and protein. There's a lot of protein in your plant meals, especially the nuts, the seeds, and the greens. Okay, so the protein digestion starts in the stomach. It starts in the stomach, and it finishes in the duodenum along with the fat and the carb. And we go through that if you go back through the module if you're confused. And I also included some in the advanced section, some little videos that go through, you know, just in a kind of graphical way. So it's not just, you know, me talking to you about it. So, yeah, so the protein meal is, you know, animals are protein and fat. Plants are mostly going to be, like, nuts are going to be fat and protein with some carb. And then, like, things like greens are going to be pretty much carb and protein without any. And that's slow carb, like mostly fiber carb. Something like, let's see, what's another plant? Coconut is mostly fat, a little bit of protein, a little bit of carb. So all foods are mixed. And so there's protein in everything. There's a ton of protein in broccoli and kale. You want your body to be able to utilize it. So I think it's very important, if somebody has disruption in their stomach acid, that they be taking bitters prior to all meals, unless they're eating fruit only, and then they don't need it, because there's very little protein in fruit. Okay. Susan, why are so many people having their gallbladders removed anyway? Well, have you watched how they eat and take care of themselves their whole lives through? They're over-consuming processed fats. They're making it difficult for the body to stay in good repair, and their gallbladders are just being overtaxed. We live in a toxic world. The liver is constantly producing more bile to try to detoxify the environment. The bile itself that the gallbladder is handling is pretty toxic stuff. Lots and lots of reasons. I know it's like an epidemic. But people, they eat junk. They don't take care of their bodies. Yeah. Janine, what would cause loss of appetite? I can't remember the name of enzyme produces in the gut that tells you you're hungry. So the enzyme, it's not an enzyme, it's a hormone. The hormone that gets produced in the stomach that tells the body you're hungry is ghrelin. And ghrelin is a hormone that just, it feeds on this empty stomach. It tells the body, hey, we're hungry. It feeds back to the hypothalamus. It says, okay, eat. So what would cause loss of appetite? Well, a rare thing would be deficiency of ghrelin. Sometimes illness, chronic illness, people when they have cancers they lose their appetite. If you have a low stomach acid and you're eating a meal and you're feeling excessively full with just small amounts of food because it's sitting like a rock, that could cause loss of appetite. So whenever somebody asks me what would cause what a specific symptom, I always have to answer depends. And I want you guys to be thinking in terms of why and how things function. So there's usually no one answer to what would cause lack of appetite, right? There's going to be like, okay, what's some other things going on with the person? So never look at symptoms or diseases. Look at the person who presents with that and what's the other stuff going on, and ask tons of questions about that. So Janine is saying she had a white count come up and at 12. So your white count is up at 12, and polycythemia, which is excessive red, so it's excessive white and red blood cells. Cirrhosis was reversed, but still goes through loss of appetite. Well, certainly a disease like cirrhosis can do it. So keep working on the cirrhosis. And I would say don't focus on particular symptoms. Focus on balance. Focus on restoring balance. What are more things that you can do to restore balance? What kind of things can you improve in your food? What kind of things can you improve in your parasympathetic tone and vagal nerve stimulation? And what kind of things can you improve in your mental attitude, toxic exposures, all of that sort of stuff play in. So, yeah, lots for you to think about. And it really helps when you want to get answers on these calls to ask specific questions, because generic questions, we could go on all day and I could just really just send you into the modules to learn it. But specific questions about mechanisms, like an example of a specific question was Charlotte's, is it necessary to do the bitters with it? That was a very specific question, and I can answer that easily. But what could cause lack of appetite? That leads me to, well, let me hear more about it, right? And she gave me a little bit more that she has cirrhosis and has had it looks like you had low white blood cells when they came up and then polycythemia, but I would want to be knowing a lot more to see what's going on with the appetite, like what's going on with the digestion and what's going on with the brain connection. Yeah, so let me look at the chat. Lynn's on there chatting away. Susan says, I recently discovered it was gluten that was giving me palpitations. Great. So one of the first things we do with people when I'm taking them through any kind of program, especially, you know, digestive reset, which is at the heart of almost everything, is you get them off gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and sugar. If you get them off of those things, you oftentimes see miraculous results. Gluten can create havoc in your gut. I don't believe that anybody who's sick with any kind of symptom, any kind of disease, should assume they don't have a gluten intolerance. I think they should assume that they do have a gluten intolerance until proven. It's basically gluten is guilty until proven innocent. Let's see. Janine, we're not using Join Me. I can go over to Join Me and look, but I wasn't using Join Me right now until we start to do the screen share, which we're going to do a genetic screen share in a little bit when Drina comes on. Elaine, do you have any suggestions for a 90-year-old man with trigeminal neuralgia? He's my dad, already had surgery, meds just up since his attacks are getting worse. Can it be tied to diet? Everything's tied to diet. So whenever somebody says, my this person or that person has any particular condition, while I'm not going to say this particular dietary thing is going to help with this particular condition, Your first job with everybody is to restore balance, is to make sure that they're off the foods that hurt the body, on the foods that help the body, off inflammatory foods and on anti-inflammatory foods. Are they eating a more alkaline balanced diet or a more acid balanced diet? So it's, you're about balance. We talked a lot about this in the videos and the things leading up to this program. It's about balance. So yes, I can see it. Reverse. I've seen people's trigeminal neuralgia go away with acupuncture. Is acupuncture a cure for trigeminal neuralgia? No, there's a lot of underlying causes. It's an inflammation irritation of the nerves. So why are those nerves being irritated? You can look at vagal nerve stimulation. So I start everybody with a gut repair. I start them. It's not that I just jump in and I don't address things from a symptomatic thing if I can give them relief. Sometimes acupuncture can be helpful. Sometimes hot packs on the face, castor oil packs over the area of the nerve can be helpful. St. John's wort, which is very good at neurotrophic and helping to support that. Something like that could be good, either applied topically to the face, taken internally. There's a number of things, but it all goes down to get them on a good diet, get them off the crap, be smoking or drinking or eating processed foods, you got to get them off. And it's that's going to be at the root of everything. It really is. And then you're here to learn the more sophisticated ways to get their digestion working. I'm reading the rest of these questions. Janine lost her gallbladder in 2001. Yes, that's not good. Okay, I'm looking. Most of these questions were answered in the chat. Lynn is answering about the timing of bitters. Yes, it's fine to take them before a meal alongside digestive enzymes. I would say the best way to do it is to take the bitters before the meal and the digestive enzymes during the meal. Are enzymes also safe to take indefinitely like bitters? You know, the thing is about it, you want to build yourself to the point where you don't need the enzymes so much, that you're eating a lot of foods that have naturally occurring enzymes, that you're eating, you know, fermented foods and sprouted foods and not such heavy foods. But if you're going to continue to eat heavy foods, that take a lot of digestive capacity, especially if you're older. Your pancreatic function has gone down. It depends on how long you've been on a poor diet. I started eating better when I was in my mid to late 20s. So my body systems weren't as aggravated as somebody who started this in their 30s or 40s or 50s. Keishel says her backyard is against a graveyard, so there, she's assuming they're spraying something. Yeah, and then there's toxic exposures. Elaine says no smoking or breathing, eat lots of sugar and gluten. So there, start there. You can be a miracle worker just by taking somebody off their sugar and gluten. You know, find ways to get it off, even if it's not the best ways to get them off initially. That can be good. And dandelion is another way to support the liver as well. It's a good one. Thank you, Lynn. Let's see. Okay, so there's one more question from Judy. There are so many products out there with collagen now. Has there any been research about eating collagen actually going to build collagen? It doesn't seem that is how cows build up their collagen. Great question, Judy. I have some exceptions. There are some people that are pushing, you know, the bone broth and the collagen and all that, but here's the thing. Collagen is a protein, and when it goes into the body, that protein gets broken down into amino acids. Then the amino acids get absorbed. The collagen itself does not magically pass through the tract and get absorbed into the bloodstream so it can do its thing. And by the time the collagen makes its way down to the area where the leaky gut is happening, it's not collagen anymore. It's mostly going to be amino acids. Then those amino acids need to be put back together to make collagen. My understanding, the theory, is that then you have all those amino acids. But there's other ways to get those amino acids. There's a lot of those amino acids in mushrooms and sea vegetables. So a mushroom sea vegetable broth can give you that effect of collagen, right? Looking at why is your body not making collagen? Like, why is it short on collagen? Well, maybe not the amino acids, may not have the amino acids, but it may not have the nutrients, the cofactors it needs to put those together. So manganese is a super important one. Vitamin C is super important. So there's a lot of ways you don't have to eat collagen to make collagen. How do cows do it, right? Well, they eat the grass, and the grass has all the amino acids that they need, and they get formed. So you don't have to eat collagen. It's a speedy way for a lot of people because you know you have all the nutrients there in one place. But we've posted several times on what we call a plant-based bone broth, if you want to call it that. But it's basically a collagen broth. Okay, so we have Charlotte. Let me open your line, Charlotte. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you. How about you?
I'm good. I actually, this will be easier for me to just ask you instead of typing.
Sure.
But it's a question about myself. And long story short, I think that I have an issue with absorbing protein. But I have tried to go vegetarian many, many times. I also think that I have, like, issues with low blood sugar and hypoglycemia that I've had since I was a young girl because I would always get dizzy. Mm-hmm. And my question is, I would like to be vegetarian, but I feel that when I eat vegan sources of protein, that my blood sugar doesn't feel stable, and I get hungry very quick, and I just don't feel well. It isn't until I have, like, an animal protein source that I feel my blood sugar more balanced, and I feel like I have more energy, and I don't feel like I crash as quick. So what would you suggest for me to do in that situation, since I would like to stop eating animal protein, but that's the only time that I really feel like it stabilizes my blood sugar from meal to meal? Okay. And I don't know why that is.
Sorry. I'll be answering you from a couple of perspectives there, right? So number one, have you ever tested the blood sugar when you're feeling that way to see if it truly is low? And the reason I ask is that I've worked with people, thousands of people over the years, who've tested their blood sugar, and much to their surprise, when they have that feeling of being, you know, lightheaded and off, they really don't have low blood sugar, they have high blood sugar. So that's number one, get a blood sugar meter and test to see what's really going on at those times.
I do have one, yeah, and I was doing that upon your suggestion. I'm always, like, above 100, even when I'm feeling, well, okay. I'd say above, like, 95 to, like, 110, even when I'm feeling, like, low and dizzy.
Okay, so it's not low blood sugar. It's inability to get the sugar across the cells, and it's probably insulin resistance. And it could be some nutrient deficiencies that you need to get the sugar into the cells. And maybe it's protein. Maybe it's the extra protein. But here's what I'm going to ask you. When you go to the vegetarian sources, what are you eating? What are the foods you're eating?
Well, I mean, I will do greens. I will do peas, hemp seeds, different nuts, occasionally tempeh or tofu. Broccoli, you know, I mean, I don't discriminate against any vegetables, so.
Okay, so lots of vegetables. It doesn't sound like you're going for mostly grains, or are you eating grains?
Okay. I mean, I'll have some quinoa, too, but I'll definitely do the hemp seeds and the spirulina and things that I've been told are higher in protein.
Okay, and when you do this, do you have you done like a diet diary to see, are there ever times when you can have a vegetarian meal and still feel fine afterwards?
Yeah, but that'll be like one meal then in the daytime. Like I could do one meal like that, and then after that, if I do it for every meal, I'll just feel like I'm crashing.
Okay, so here's the thing. Why do you want to go vegetarian then?
Well, I just, it's for my personal beliefs of, treatment
fair.
Of animals.
Yeah, that's fair. So it's possible that you're not, that your stomach acid is low and you're not absorbing protein real well. And in order to get enough protein, you have to eat these super concentrated sources. So that's one possibility, right? And without going through an hour-long health history on you, you know, I'm just going to take some guesses and give you some direction to move in to check. So that's one possibility. So you need a lot of concentrated protein in order to get extract out. So if you can only extract 10% of the protein you take in, and you take in some hemp seeds and there's 10 grams of protein in it or whatever, you're going to get one. Whereas if you take in a steak and there's 30 grams of protein, you're going to get three.
Right, yeah.
Okay. So that's one thing, that's that amount. I'm going to ask you this. Have you ever done, like, tried protein powders?
Yeah, I'll do that for my, the past week I've been doing that for my, like, breakfast smoothie. I have a vegan protein powder that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And does that make a difference?
I mean, it'll sustain me for a little bit, but then afterward I feel like I still need to eat. Like, yesterday I did the shake in the morning, and then I went and had a tofu with veggie lunch, and I was craving sugar as soon as I got home.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I would recommend you do is you keep a food diary and you keep a blood sugar diary, and you monitor your blood sugars for the entirety of the space between meals, and you look to see if there's any patterns, and you look to see if, and you do your symptoms. So when you're feeling lightheaded or craving sugar, you write them down, and do monitor that for about 3 days. And see what you come up with. You might be surprised that you come up with some patterns, that there's certain foods. There may be even be foods that you're sensitive to, right? And some people, I worked with people like that. They want to do vegan, and they try to do vegan, and when they do, they end up with a lot of cravings, and they can't keep stable, but they figure out that if they eat 2 or 3 ounces a day of some sort of animal protein, that works for them. So if you're really committed to doing vegan, then let's just go through this and figure out how you can do it, because there's got to be a way. It's just a matter of, there's some nutrient imbalances that are causing you to be out. And I would start by looking at the blood sugars.
Okay, so monitor my blood sugar in between every meal and just record the foods I'm eating for 3 days and notice
how
the
you
pattern.
Feel, and when you have your symptoms, when you have the most cravings, when you have headaches, when you have lightheadedness or whatever you have. And then also I would, when you're monitoring it, monitor every 15 minutes from the time you eat up until, because you want to see if there's a crash after. So when you just do one measure, you go, okay, well, that's one measure. But if you measure for 15 minutes until it peaks, what you'll see is it'll peak and then it'll start to come down. then you don't have to measure it quite so often after it comes down, maybe every 45 minutes to an hour, and then just keep going and see if it goes down below. So you might have a high blood sugar after you eat and then a reactive hypoglycemia, and that might be what causes it. But with that one number you gave me, there's no way that that's low blood sugar.
Okay, so 15 minutes after I eat for about an hour, every 15 minutes, and then after
every
that.
Every 15 minutes for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. If it's still going up, mm-hmm. then don't stop. Like if you go and it's going up and up and up and it's at an hour and it hasn't come down yet, then go for 15 minutes more until it's starting to come down.
Okay, and then when it comes down, about every 30 to 45 minutes.
Right, and then just see how low it goes and see how, you know, if you go out there. So you may be hyperinsulinemic, you're producing too much insulin, which is then causing, you know, the cells to become resistant. So you're not feeling very good when the sugar's in your cell, in your bloodstream, but not in your cells. And then after a while, you go down. We go through all this in the blood sugar course. But yeah, just give that a try and see how
Thank
that goes.
You. Thank
yeah,
you.
You're welcome. Sure. Okay, so that was Charlotte. I see Laura's hand up, and I don't know if it's because I didn't put it down before or Laura has another question. So, Laura?
Hi. Yeah, I didn't have another one, so I think...
I just didn't put your hand down. Okay.
I'm good.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, I don't see Drina. Do you see Drina, Lynn? Is Drina on? If Drina, if you're on the phone, raise your hand. So I was going to do your lab, and I don't want to do it if you're not here because I know you wanted to be here for it. We can always do it on an NEPT call. In NEPT, we cover everything, so we've been doing a lot of genetics on our NEPT case study calls. But I don't see Drina here. So anybody else? Questions, comments? Let me go on to the Join Me to see if anybody – I opened it because I thought we were going to show the screen, but it doesn't make sense to show somebody's lab if they're not here. No other questions there. Anybody? Star 2 raises your hand. Martha. Hi, Martha.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hey, I didn't know you were in this program.
I'm sorry, am I in the wrong line?
Let me look at my calendar. Maybe we're over time on this one. We have two back to back. Usually we have the ERC, you know, the members program, and then we have a call for our practitioners. And right now we're on the practitioner call. Yeah. That call starts at 4:30. Unless you're in the practitioner, you're not in the practitioner program. No. Yeah. Come back at 4:30. Yeah. Come back at 4:30 and we'll be ready for you. Okay.
Thank you much. Bye.
Sure. No problem. Okay, so that was Martha. We have Bernardin? Brend? I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with your name, so go for it.
That's okay. Hi, this is Brenda Bernardin.
Oh, Brenda. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. So I think we have communicated a little bit via email. I am struggling with SIBO and major skin issues, and you had mentioned detox capacity being definitely over the top. So my question is how to support liver, and I love the question that just came in regarding blood sugar and feeling better with more animal protein and vegetable, because that's definitely my case too. And I am going to be coming to Shine, so I'm a little bit concerned. I'm looking forward to the food, but I'm also a little bit concerned with my SIBO and gas situation and all of the plant foods.
There's a couple questions there. Let me address that one first. If you're in a situation where you can't go for 3 days without animal foods, we don't serve animal foods at our conference. We just serve plants. We serve a wide variety, some raw, some cooked. We slightly steamed. If there are particular things that you need from the plant kingdom that you want to make sure that we have, you can put in a request. But I always tell people if you have that situation, just bring some cans of sardines or something with you and throw them in your suitcase. Yeah, and that way you're taking care of yourself. Yeah.
Super. Okay.
Yep. And then the other question was about the gut and the skin.
And the gut and the skin, yeah.
And then supporting the liver.
I'm still having lots of breakouts, and they definitely get worse at night. Like, I'll wake up, and that's when everything's the calmest, my stomach, my skin, everything. And then at night, as the day progresses and I get more bloated, I can feel itchy, burny, and I can just see little red spots. It's not like acne. It's just like rashy. I don't know. It's awful, though.
But they come and then they go away at night, and then they come back again during the next day.
Well, it's worse during the night, so I'll wash my face at night, and I have to use cold water. Any kind of heat just exacerbates it, and all of a sudden I'll just be covered in red bumps all over my face. And in the morning, thank God, it's better.
Okay.
But, it keeps coming and going.
So it comes and it goes. Yeah, so there's a number of things to look at here. Number one, I would ask you all the basic questions. Are you off the top allergens? Gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, sugar, hydrogenated fat?
100%. Yes. Perfect. I make all my own food, all organic,
Perfect.
Clean.
Good. Yes. And you've been doing that for a long time?
Yes.
Okay. So have you ever done any allergy testing or elimination diet where you like get yourself down to like 4 or 5 foods or fasting for 4 or 5 days?
Well, when I did my SIBO diet, which was extremely strict.
Like the elemental diet?
You know, I'm kind of tempted to do that because I'm so frustrated with, I did an MRT allergy test, and I'm not sure if you like that one, the mediated response.
Yeah, there's a lot of them out there, and I've not found any of them that I feel completely comfortable with that they're, but they give you a guideline. They give you at least something. Some of them come back with so many things that it's, you just have to do it with a leaky gut. You can't eliminate, 47 foods.
Lemons and cucumbers and good stuff.
Yeah.
Broccoli. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if those are things you're eating on a regular basis, then I'd certainly go back to that test and find the dozen foods that you don't react to. And I would say none at all, not even a mild, if there are, a dozen or whatever number you can find, and then just do nothing but that for 7 days. And then one at a time, you add those things back. And you see how you feel. If at the end of those 7 days, you're like, well, I haven't had a breakout since day 3.
Yeah.
Something's up. A histamine reaction comes to mind, so histamine sensitivity. But I would start with that. You already have the test. You paid money for it. You might as well just use it. And you're going to combine the elimination with the provocation, right? It's not practical to avoid, the gazillion foods that are on there indefinitely, and you shouldn't have to, but you should be working on the underlying. So let's go back to the SIBO, right? So you have SIBO. Was it diagnosed with a breath test, or are you just assuming it was SIBO based on symptoms? Either way is fine.
I had a breath test. I did treatment with rifaximin and metronidazole. I did the 6 to 8 weeks. Super strict SIBO diet. I retested, it came back worse, and I had C. diff. So then my whole protocol switched 180 degrees, and I was put on major probiotics, had to do treatment for the C. diff, and thankfully that cleared up. And then I was just kind of left hanging. So now I'm doing an herbal
protocol.
You did
an incomplete protocol. You did an incomplete protocol. You did the kill the bacteria protocol. It's not the bacteria's fault. Right? It's the terrain. So you've got to look at a lot of factors. I would highly recommend you go, even if you're only on module 1 or 2, skip down and read through the SIBO stuff. But come back and do all the stuff from top to bottom. Because that's the thing.
Right.
It's a SIBO. Let's just kill the bacteria. That's a medical approach.
Right.
There's the migrating motor complex. There's the vagus nerve control of that. There are certain foods to move things. There are herbs that can move things along. You've got to do all of those things. You can't just do that. You got to look at ileocecal valve. I mean, it could be ileocecal valve that's stuck shut and it's not allowing things to go and escape. You got to be careful with probiotics, like what you use, because if you use lactic acid forming bacteria and they get stuck in the small intestine, they're going to make your SIBO worse, even though it'll make your large intestine better and they clear that up.
Right.
But you've got to be really careful about what you take. If you're going to be taking, my opinion, this is just my opinion, but a lot of people agree with it, is that if you're going to be trying to replenish your gut flora in your large intestine while you're working on SIBO, that the best route is through enemas or implants. Suppositories for your probiotics.
Okay.
Get them in the large intestine. Don't make them go through the small intestine because they're going to want to stop and have lunch with their friends, right? There's a real fun environment there.
Yes. I've been taking Megaspore, the spore-based probiotic.
Yeah.
What suppository would you recommend?
Suppository-wise, you can do Megaspore. You can do some combination. I mean, there's a lot of different ones you can do. You make your own suppositories, right? You just take coconut oil, cacao butter, and you melt it down, and you put your probiotics in it. If you go online, I think I even found them either on Amazon or someplace, but I just look for suppository molds, and there I found them. At first, I was having people use these things that IKEA sells that they look like they're like stirrers that you can use like ice cube trays, and I'd say, well, put them in there and then break them. And then I went, well, I wonder if there are some. Oh yeah, suppository molds.
Oh,
and then you just put your make your own, and then you can do whatever you want, whatever works well for you. You can experiment with it. You can experiment with the amount. It's very cool, and then you just insert them a couple times a day.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Yes, I've been doing all the motility work because I have Hashimoto's. So that's definitely been an issue.
Okay.
So, yeah, I work on that. Low-dose naltrexone, the Modal Pro.
Okay.
I'm doing the bitters.
So you're doing all that. Okay, so you are doing all
that. Good stuff, yeah.
Look at your ileocecal valve. Look at your motor, you know, make sure that you're in parasympathetic mode. So those simple things like breathing. It's hard when you know, oh, God, am I going to get bloated after I eat this meal? It's hard to sit down and relax and eat it comfortably. But I would strip everything away, go back to the basics.
Okay.
Work on that ileocecal valve, do the suppositories of the probiotics, not top down. If you're going to do something orally, I would stick to Bifidus or, what's the other one? Thermophilus. I think it's not Thermophilus. Okay. Steph, where are you? Help me. Helvetica. Helvetica.
Do you like the Megaspore for oral?
Not if you have SIBO. I don't.
No?
No, there's too much stuff in it. There's too much stuff in it that can get stuck there. I would go to Custom Probiotics and get their D-lactic acid-free formula for oral. Or just Bifidus. And then, you know, you can just do Bifidus because Bifidus won't grow there. And then do the rest of them suppository-wise. And then let's look at your liver because, you know, the liver and the skin are so tightly tied together. It's just really looking at what can you do to support your liver. You know, dandelion tea and burdock root and some of the other herbs to support the liver. Look at Cologast.
Mm-hmm.
So the liver is doing all this detox and it creates this bile that's pretty darn toxic. And if you don't get sluggish liver function, it just sits there, right? And the liver can't get rid of these toxins. The skin tries to. So it could be something like that. Especially since you're saying it comes on, like after you go to bed, liver gallbladder time is between, 11 and 2 or 12 and 2, something like that. So it could be that when you're in that mode, the liver gallbladder are trying to get rid of your stuff. They're active and then boom. And that's in Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be looking at liver gallbladder support. Yellow dock, really good herb for skin stuff related to the liver in terms of cleaning out the liver. It may not be for everybody, but I've seen really great results with yellow dock.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm so excited to come to Shine. I can't wait.
I'm excited for you. Yay. I can't wait to meet you.
You too. It's going to be my birthday weekend, so.
Oh, we'll have to make sure we remember that and you get to celebrate. It's been a great way to celebrate with, 150 of your favorite friends.
Yay.
Yay.
Thank you for everything.
Oh, you're welcome.
I really appreciate you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For those of you who haven't signed up for Shine yet, you better do it soon because we're running out of seats between us and the people coming. We have close to 150. So, and it's supposedly the weather's going to still be good. The weather here in Austin's still in the 80s. So, and it's supposed to be that way for the next week and a half. So hopefully it'll stay that way. But if you haven't signed up, go to your shinelivebonus.com and get your ticket, get your free ticket. And I see some people on here I know are coming. So I'm excited to meet. Is Steph on? I don't see Steph on. I could pull her on and see if she had any other thoughts on the SIBO. So Stan says, the VA just sent me a letter as part of the Gulf War Syndrome Study Group asking if I'd partake in a study of people taking Concord grape juice for improving fatigue and thinking processes. Way to go. No kidding. I want to recommend they do organic and what else. I can post a letter to the Shine Group. What? I would say no way. You don't want to do Concord grape juice. It's so high glycemic. It's
just, it can just have send people into crash mode, especially if they have any kinds of blood sugar issues, even if it's organic. Wow. And it's pasteurized. So I don't know. Yeah, that would be weird. Yeah. Post the letter. I'd love to see it. I always like to laugh at these things. Let's see if there's any others. Okay. Stan, do you think making your own probiotic at home, organic cabbage, Himalayan hand mix? Oh, absolutely. It's a great thing to do. Oh yeah, absolutely. That's your best bet is to make your probiotics at home. So foods at home. So I like to do sauerkraut and various kinds of fermented veggies. My favorite is actually cashew yogurt. So I blend cashews with equal parts water and probiotic powder and leave it 24 hours and it's tangy and yummy, and coconut yogurt. And there's a whole bunch of recipes in the, if you go into the grand part of the program, the client part, there's a link on one of the pages. We have a 150 or 200 page recipe guide that has some probiotic recipes in there. But yeah, that's great. I love that. Chat, let's see. Stan says, I generally do bulletproof style low acidic coffee, collagen, creatine, grass-fed butter, organic coconut all mixed together into a latte in the morning, a pinch of Himalayan salt, turmeric, and very fine black pepper. Good fats and not too much caffeine. You know, and some people can tolerate caffeine and some people can't. And, you know, I can't. My genetics are, I have several different SNPs that I don't tolerate it, and it just keeps me wired. But you have to just really be careful if you have gut impairment. If you have any kind of gastritis or leaky gut or anything like that, because coffee and alcohol can actually thin the mucosal lining. Yeah. And it's stimulating and addicting. So, but he does this in the morning, does 20 ounces of water before it. Yeah. What's my favorite protein? I have quite a few. It depends. I like Sun Warrior Blend, which is a combination of pea, cranberry, and hemp. I like Designs for Health Pure Pea, which is the vanilla one. That's really good. I like, what's that other one I like? Oh, Donna Gates has a fermented protein powder that I like a lot. She has a chocolate and a coconut flavor, and it's got like mushrooms, and there's a lot of fermented stuff in there. So, you know, some people may not tolerate it if they have some issues. I'm thinking of some of the others that I have. There's one called Elite Green Protein from Health Force Nutritionals, and it's actually all various greens in there, and there's like 16 grams of protein per serving. There's a Sacha Inchi protein that's really good, and it's very inexpensive, organic Sacha Inchi that I like. So there's a lot of them that I like a lot. Okay, June, a friend is medicated for mental issues, Lyme, lots of emotional things, in and out of hospital, working with alternative doctors, asked what she ate for breakfast. She said oatmeal, banana, blueberries, and pineapple. Is that helpful? Ouch. That's a high glycemic breakfast with very low protein and no fat. You know, my idea of a good breakfast is you want to have greens, you want to have fiber, you want to have good omega-3 fats, and you want to have a good source of protein. That's the stuff you really need with your breakfast. So, and the protein can be, you know, it totally can be plant source if that's your orientation. It could be a piece of fish, whatever. Personally, mine is a green smoothie with chia porridge and some and a cashew or coconut yogurt. I love that. And it's plant. It just holds me over for many, many hours. But you got to work with people. Yeah, I think it's really challenging when you have friends who have been given bad advice. She thinks she's eating a healthy meal, and that's just sending her flying. That's not good for her. Yeah, that's going to get her to have a really good breakfast. Go into the grand recipe guide and look at some of the guidelines for breakfast. Yeah, lots there. June said, my first thought was for her to do food combining. My first thought is to lower her carbohydrate. She's getting a huge carbohydrate load with no fat or protein, with very little fat or protein. and she's going to have her blood sugar crashing. She's going to feel low energy. She's going to have her leptin levels peaking too soon. She's going to be starving after dinner and craving sugar. There's a lot that she needs help with. Probiotics. I like to start the day with something with probiotics in it. So cashew yogurt, even sauerkraut sometimes. My lunch yesterday was big bowl of sauerkraut with some fermented almond cheese and some hemp seeds. It's delicious. So Janine says, will we be getting an email about the grant program? Yeah. And here's what happened. You all got an email about it the very first day. And I said to our person who runs it, I said, why did they get that the first day? They don't even know what that is or how to use it. So if you go back in your email, if you save them, we sent you an email that says, hey, if you want to invite one of your clients to go through this program, but you didn't even started the program. So, in the future, we're not going to send it out until you've been in the program for a month and then know what to do with it. But we'll send you an email. Basically, you've got access to all the materials there. So you can see what we're doing. You can take yourself through it, and you just go through it step by step by step. When you feel confident with the materials, when you're far enough along in the program that you want to start taking someone else through it, then you can give them the link. They sign up. And they'll get some of our emails that guide them through it, but they will also, or unless they want to turn that off, they don't have to if you just want to coach them, but you get to coach them through it. You get to say, okay, let's get your assessments. Oh, I'm looking at your assessments. I think you have some issues with low stomach acid. Let's talk about this. Let's do an HCL challenge. So you go through the program materials yourself, and then you take somebody else through it, and it's a great way to learn, and it's a great way to not have to create all the materials yourself. If I do notice a pattern in my blood sugar after meals, what should I do? And if it's an issue with poor protein absorption, would the bitters be enough to help if it's an insulin issue? Now, there's a whole, so this is hard to say because we have a whole program that takes you through it. We have a program for practitioners, but we also have it for consumers. We are going to be releasing that in December. So giving people a chance to get through this, the consumer, and they'll start it in January, and then we'll be offering the practitioner level insulin resistance. But in a nutshell, I'm going to just give you the short and sweet because we have a 20-hour course on this as well. It's basically you're going to be measuring. If you see a pattern where your blood sugar is dropping really, really low, but it's going also high, you're going to have to follow some low glycemic eating patterns. You might have to do some things to reset your insulin receptors. There's various nutrients. So it's way beyond the scope of this right now because we're in, you'd have to be going through that program and asking questions about it because this isn't a training module. This is asking questions. So I'd like you to learn the materials and then come back. But if you do the tracking and you come back on a call and say, hey, this is what I found, then I can talk about it, but I can't preemptively say because there's so many different patterns that might show up that I could be here for several hours. Make sense? So bring it and we'll go for it. And yes, this is recorded June. My favorite lunch, I think what I just described is one of my favorite lunches. I'll usually take a handful of arugula, a bunch of sauerkraut, throw it in a bowl, throw on some hemp seeds, some walnuts, sometimes cashew yogurt if I have it, or fermented almond cheese if I have it. I sometimes get that. There's this nut and seed based Parmesan cheese substitute, but it's basically, it's called Parma. It's like walnuts and hemp seeds and nutritional yeast. That's one of my favorites. It's so loaded with nutrition and it's green and semi. Books being released by naturopaths lately seem to point to L-glutamine as being the secret sauce. What do I think of L-glutamine? Go through the protocols we have on leaky gut. It's a possibility. It's a very good one. Some people can't tolerate it because of various SNPs, and it ends up getting converted to glutamate, which is a excitatory. If they don't have the GAD enzyme working properly, then they don't convert it to GABA, and it can be a mess. Wait till you go through that part of the program. You'll hear all about what I think about it. Yes, I use it, and I'm also cautious in using it. Janine says was how we sell get paid for coaching and how the link works. So the link will sign the person up. So you can either sign somebody up for a coaching program with you and say, hey, I'm going to do this whatever, 6-week coaching program, 8 weeks, 10-week, whatever you want it to be. I'm going to give you this many private calls with me. We're going to do your assessments, and I'm going to give you materials, and I'm going to give you access to protocols and all that, and I'm going to guide you through it. They pay you, and then you just give them that link, and you've already gotten paid for it. They don't have to pay. They just click on that link, and they get into my program for free. That's how you can do it for paid. If you don't want to sell it to them and you just work in with your friend or your family member, or you're going to bonus a client who's been a good client, you just give them the link. You give them the link, they sign up. You can also go in and use that link yourself and sign them up. But if you do, you have to make sure you have their name, their address, their phone number, and their appropriate email address, and have their permission to do it. Elaine, loving the training so far. Yippee. Excited about Shine. Also excited about food ideas. Yay. Great. So are you clear on that, Janine, after I just explained it? Just click on the link, get the person signed up. That's it. That's all you have to do. We'll make sure that we send out an email that explains it in more detail if people need it that way. Yay, thank you. So we're going to go because I have another call in 4 minutes, and I have to switch gears here. It doesn't look like Drina ever showed up, so we didn't get to do her her lab, and she'll have to do it on one of our other calls. She has plenty of calls because she's in the nutritional endocrinology training, and maybe we have another one tonight, so maybe she can make the one tonight. I really appreciate you guys taking your time out, and I love the questions. Keep them coming, and know that you're going to get the best out of this with more specific questions as opposed to what do I do for this symptom. A lot of times when I answer you, I'm going to refer you back into specific modules in the program. That way you'll get the most out of that, because sometimes, like I said, this isn't a training call and there's like 25 hours of education in there. So I'll say, oh, that's a good question. Here's a few tips. Go to that module. Watch the videos. Okay, and you've got downloadable transcripts the whole bit. So I'm really happy to have you here. I think our next call that's CMDS specific is, I think it's actually next week, which is just gut, although today we seem to cover mostly gut. We had a few non-gut things today. I think our next one is, yes, Thursday, the 20th of October. That's going to be an open coaching call where you can bring cases, you can ask questions. What I'd highly recommend that you do is between now and then, wherever you are in the program, do another 3 sections. They're small. Some of them are small. And if they're long sections, you don't have to do 3, but they're relatively short. Some of them are 18-minute videos. Some of them are 25. A couple of them are an hour or more. As we get further into like the small intestine and the gut repair and inflammatory bowel disease, they're longer. But go there, and if you have your questions, post to the Facebook group, and we'll be talking again next Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Central Time. So I'm going to stop the recording, and then I'm going to open up the line. If anybody wants to hear each other's voice and say 1, 2, 3, bye, we'll do that. Let me open it up. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Talk soon.
Bye. Have a great evening.
Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great evening. Thanks.